Marathon by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Scholarships are available. Visit rtip.arizona.edu.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half minus about 15 minutes because it's quarter of. And Jeremy, I gave Jeremy a couple of extra minutes because he had something. So good timing.
Yeah, good here.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Jeremy Plunk, good to hear your voice.
Good. It's like, the hoss? It's been a few years, right?
That's pretty funny, actually. That's very good. And you got to come back a winner. That you have to do the same thing the hoss did.
Yeah, just, you know, we'll stop over at Colonial in between and come back and win another cup and have Tom Durkin compare you to Lazarus. That's the ultimate in race calls.
I love it. I love it. JP, I wanted to get to you because... I was out west and had the 2 weeks at Santa Anita, so I didn't, obviously we handicapped into opening weekend at Keeneland, but, you can't do Keeneland without the Plonker.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been a long run now, 16 years working with Keeneland, and, I'm approaching my 5,000th race with them. I think I'm at like 4,900 and some consecutively. So we had a good day yesterday, so I guess after almost 5,000, we still have a little bit of touch left in us, even on a wet track, and we're gonna have a wet track again here today. So we'll try to overcome it and adjust. That's what you've got to do on these kind of days.
Are we off the turf again?
Yeah, off the turf today for sure. It'll be announced here shortly, but I got word from the track. So we were definitely off the grass today. Races 6 and 8 were scheduled for the turf on the 9 race card. So they will go to the main track. I have not seen any scratches announced yet. So, obviously you got to play the break after that and see what happens, who's left in the fields and adjust accordingly, because pace scenarios, field sizes, all those things are in flux, when the field makes a massive change.
Well, as it happens, that 8th race was a 12-horse group with 2 MTOs, including actually Giant Game from Dale Romans and Hayes Strike from McPeak. So you got two major players actually that look eligible to run. And then on the Fillion Mare race, that was a mile and a 16th, second level allowance. This is a third level allowance, the 8th. The 6th has got an MTO that is going to be maybe favored, Story Hour from Robbie Medina. So the card is not devastated by any means. The 2-year-olds show up in the Second race again, and of course we had a very impressive winner yesterday, the McLean's Music that I talked about at the top of the show. Before we do any handicapping and look ahead to a big day tomorrow with the Maker's Mark and so forth, and of course the Jenny Wiley and the Lexington on Saturday. But Jeremy, go back to last opening weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and there's been plenty of bias conversation. Marcus thought that the track was playing favorably up front. What was your take in totality?
I think in the sprint races, the average winner, I like to look at where the horses are a half mile into the race. We have that in the handicapping database I helped them create back in 2008. And, you know, you can look at all the races and all the running styles and all that kind of stuff, and it was about a length faster early, so you know it was certainly horses more forward, a length more forward. So a typical horse, let's say, is a length off the lead in a 6 furlong claiming race that wins, is a length off the lead. This track was playing about a length quicker than what you would expect. So it was definitely a little forward in sprint races. That's just the case at Keeneland. It's almost always that way. You know, speed's going to win the Keeneland races going 6, 6.5, and even up to 7 a lot. But 6, 6.5, speed's going to dominate those races. The two-turn races, though, play a lot more fair, and they did on opening weekend. You know, we saw 5 two-turn races opening weekend. One horse won on the lead, one horse won from deep, that being Sierra Leone, and the other 3 were horses that were like, you know, 3.5 lengths, something like that, off the lead after a half mile, where you would expect. So the route races played exactly like you would expect. The sprint races played faster than usual. You know, it's wind is interesting at Keeneland. You know, I'm a guy, you know, I cut my teeth and worked at Remington Park for years. And when you live in Oklahoma, you understand wind. And wind has a big impact on the way races are run and running styles. And Keeneland sitting up on the hill there in the middle of the pasture, you know, wind can play a lot when it comes to racing at Keeneland. When the flags are to the left and they have that wind at their back down the backstretch, you know, those horses that are in front are getting their lead. They're not having to work as hard to do it. And then when they turn from home, everybody's running into the wind and everybody's dissuaded. So, you know, even the closers don't want to run into it. So speed tends to hold. So a lot of times at Keeneland, what you're going to see is days when the wind, and it shifts a lot, it can go from race to race too. You know, it's not like it's always going, you know, one direction or the other, but wind is a big factor at Keeneland. It's very, very hard to adjust to, you know, because you don't see the flags all the time. If you're following on a simulcast signal, if you're at the track, you can certainly see it, but it has a major impact. And that's something, you know, charting races for Equibasin, working, you know, thousands of races at Remington Park over those years, it's a real factor. And not a lot of tracks, it's not a big deal at a lot of tracks based on their layout and things like that, and just kind of the geography of the area. So, but at Keeneland, it certainly can be a factor. Of course, Remington it is.
Well, the other part, and you talk about your database, and a lot of your handicapping takes into consideration where certain classification of horses came from on route. Opening day, opening day was quite something. You had the Dutch Row winner. It's funny, Friday. Dutch Row Michael Dubb winner at Keeneland. Saturday, a Dutch Row Michael Dubb winner at Santa Anita. But anyway, Keeneland, opening day, fairgrounds, last start, play good, pay good. Mo Stash came back for the seasonal debut for Vicky Oliver. Oh, look, Vicky Oliver won at Keeneland. Kentucky Downs. Maiden special winner, Roman Grace for Pletcher. Lasted Aqueduct. Cy B breaks the maiden coming out of Turfway. Glenn Gary comes up from Oklahoma City for Doug Anderson and wins the Lafayette Remington. Oaklawn produces Legadama for Phil Bauer and Mr. Rigney. Sam Houston produces Neat. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. One card. This is one card.
One card. And then Leslie's Rose in the Ashland out of Gulfstream. The only repeat venue was Turfway coming back in the nightcap for Jonathan Thomas and Bob LaPenta with Faith Understood. Crazy.
30 races opening week, Steve, and they came from 13 different venues. And then you had the first-time starters. You could almost count them as a 14th, you know? Yep. I mean, just it's insane. I always call Keeneland the melting pot and the 16-day All-Star game, and that's why. Everybody's wearing a different jersey, you know? It's like the old All-Star games when they wore their own jerseys and they trotted out on the field, and Cal's wearing his Orioles uniform and A-Rod's wearing his Yankee uniform, and they're next to each other. That's just kind of the way Keeneland feels all the time, you know? You get the best of the best coming here from everywhere, and you get a chance to see them kind of mesh together and match up. And that's why I use that in my handicapping, because it's so unique, right? I mean, like, if you handicap a particular circuit, you might get a sense that, okay, the Snowbirds come north and they're going to start to win the races, say, in New York, right? Your Gulfstream horses from the winter are probably going to be better than the Aqueduct Winter Warriors at a lot of divisions. But at some classifications, like, say, maybe your lower sprinters, the actual winter horses from Aqueduct may prove out to be stronger statistically. I don't know that, but just speculating that, you know, there are particular areas where groups of horses are going to be better than others. And that's what I try to evaluate with Keeneland. You're always working on a short sample size. That's what's difficult, right? It's 16 days in the spring, 17 in the fall, or 17 and 16. I get them backwards. I'd be 17 this spring without Easter. You know, you've got to make the adjustments kind of quickly and see things, but not overreact, right? That's always the danger of kind of looking at things with smaller sample sizes. That's why I like to look back and see how it's gone over time. But even things change, right? Because Gulfstream horses on the turf used to dominate the Keeneland spring meet, you know? I mean, just like, they'll win half of the races. If there are 40 turf races at the meet, Gulfstream horses would win 20 of them. It hasn't been quite as dominant the last year or two. And then you start to say, well, why, right? Every time I have a statistic or a trend or everything, I never like to just look at numbers or anything like that and not have a why behind them. Look, Gulfstream's run a lot more synthetic races over the last couple of years in the winter, and not as many turf races. There hasn't been as many quality turf races at Gulfstream this winter as there were, say, 4 or 5 years ago, because they're more apt to come off the turf, run on the synthetic, that sort of thing. So that's going to have a trickle-down effect somewhere else, right? So if the Gulfstream meet's not as deep and as strong in the turf races, where would that show up? Well, it's going to show up maybe when they get to Keeneland, right? And I think we're starting to see that some in the results, where you used to just throw a fairgrounds horse out on the turf, and they would get bet all the time. Toss the fairgrounds horse, play the Gulfstream horses, and you had the turf races pretty much figured out. Turf races were either Gulfstream, a horse who hasn't run this year coming off a long layoff, or the occasional European who might come over for a big barn. That's all you really had to do in handicapping Keeneland turf races in the spring. Now it's not as easy, you know? Now you've got a little more influence, and fairgrounds certainly, the profile of that winter has gotten better and better. The profile of Turfway has gotten better and better.
Yeah.
We still don't see the Turfway horses have much impact on the grass at Keeneland, but they're certainly having a better impact on the dirt racing transferring over. You just don't see that many Turfway to Keeneland turf winners still. But again, as that meet gets better, as the fairgrounds meet gets better, you're going to see some of these adjustments made. And that's what's fun about handicapping Keeneland, to see how it all ebbs and flows. You know, it changes over time, and you know, some things stay pretty constant. And the things that stay constant, you got to kind of hang your hat on and attack when you see them as a better.
Yeah, and there's also one element. I mean, the stakes are going to bring quality outfits and quality, you know, winners. But I chuckle about Vicky Oliver winning. Rusty Arnold will win. McPeak. You know, points for this. I mean, in the same way that you can anticipate Pletcher at Gulfstream in the winter, you can look to certain outfits that excel here.
And it can even be more specific than that, too. Like Joe Sharp, he runs horses in the mile and an eighth races here at Keeneland that fit. I mean, if you look at all the mile and an eighth races run at Keeneland since they've gone back to dirt, Todd Pletcher's got the most wins, you would assume that, right? Mile and an eighth, he's got the classy horses, a lot of stakes races at a mile and an eighth. Kenny McPeak's got a lot of horses. The third most is Joe Sharp. He's won 7 races at a mile and an eighth at Keeneland. If you'd have told me Joe Sharp has won 2 races at a mile and an eighth, I'd have believed it. If you told me 7, I'd be like, are you sure? Like, go back and check that, right? But there are people who, like, look at Keeneland, circle particular things. I think Mike Tomlinson is a trainer who waits for late in the meet, typically in the fall, but he'll have a horse waiting for the end of the meet when it gets easier at Caitlin, when a lot of the big barns have run all their big maidens early in the meet. A guy like Tomlinson waits for late in the meet, and he can pop a nice price once in a while. Joe Sharp knows which horses to bring to Caitlin to run a mile and an eighth, and they run well. He's got one coming up here on one of the weekday cards. I hate to catch so many at a time. I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, but there's a Sharp mile and an eighth horse going today. Might be today. Blue Vortex, I think, is the one today. For Sharp going a mile and an eighth. So that's one to, you know, like, you just look at these guys and like, okay, this is our plan. This is what we go after. Yeah, it's today, race number three, mile and an eighth, maiden claimer. And Joe Sharp's got Blue Vortex in there. And again, he just brings the right horses for these kind of races.
Eddie Keneally will pop with
maiden races. Yeah, yep. If Eddie Keneally in maiden races. So, like, yeah, say, break everything down, not just in general, and you, like, find these things. Like, yeah, Eddie's one of the most effective maiden, and if he drops one in for a maiden claiming tag, they're almost a blind bet at Keeneland, you know? So, yeah, it's fun. That's what makes Keeneland fun. I guess it's probably a little easier to work this way with Keeneland because you get so many different angles. It's not the same horses running against each other, you know, over the course of the entire season on the same circuit. And, you know, there's some more uniqueness to it, but that's what makes handicapping exciting. And it stays fresh because you only get it for, you know, 33 days a year, spring and fall.
Well, you know, one of the other aspects of the spring meet, of course, is the two-year-olds. Let's touch on the two-year-olds. and that is a landscape that, you know, that hasn't, you can't necessarily chisel in stone. I mean, okay, Wesley's off to a good enough start, you know, especially after yesterday. But in recent years, you know, John Enos has bubbled to the surface, Paul McEntee, John Hancock. I mean, it is not as open and shut as it was for there was a stretch where Wesley was just virtually impossible to beat.
Yeah, right. He's won 2 of 3 this meet so far, and he's won 43 out of the 80 baby races run in the spring here at Keeneland since they went back to dirt. So he's won over half of them on his own. A lot of times he'll have two entries in a particular race. A lot of times he'll enter two and scratch one. So as an advanced handicapper, you're kind of trying to figure out which one's the better ward and which one's he going to keep in the race. And he's crafty in that his jockey assignments mean absolutely nothing at Keeneland. He'll put a no-name rider on as fast as he'll put John Velasquez on, and he'll win with everybody, you know. So you can't read too much into that. But when he does ride Johnny V, they are really, really good in those two-year-old races. The percentage is ridiculous. And I did a number. I want to say something like, when Ward and Velasquez are on a favorite at Keeneland, I think there's something like 57%. It's some crazy number. But, you know, and so – but the two-year-old races, you know, the one thing about them is you rarely see a horse win a two-year-old race at Keeneland who doesn't have a local workout. It's about 85-90% of the horses who win have local workouts. And you would think, well, yeah, that's because like 90% of the horses have local workouts. No, you look down through the past performances and you'll see in any 10-12 horse field, 4, 5, 6 of them that are coming off training centers somewhere working. You want to get that local work over the track. It's almost imperative amongst the horses who win. And the horses running back later in the meet the second time almost never win. It's always the first time starters. So everybody usually jumps on those horses running back like week 4 of the meet that ran in one of the baby races earlier in the meet. That's usually a pitfall and a trap, you know, that you don't want to fall into. Typically those horses don't win. The percentage is very, very low. So pedigree's great at Keeneland. I love handicapping with pedigree there because, again, the samples are so small. Like, you know, a horse's career, they might run at Keeneland on the dirt or turf 3 or 4 times in their whole career if they have a long career, you know. So you get so many races where there's not a lot of local form. It's a great horse for course track, but if you don't have experience over the track, the next best thing you could do is follow the pedigrees and, you know, look up the stats with, you know, I like to use the BetMix database, of course, the free database we have, you know, with on the Keeneland.com website. You can go through and just kind of see how, you know, how many races have been won by particular sires. It won't give you all the data, but it'll at least give you the winner's list in that regard for free. But if you do a little deeper dive here, I mean, you're going to find some stuff out, you know. Curlin, Street Sense, you know, those horses have had a lot of success at Keeneland in the last year or two, you know, and they're veteran sires, but their horses are running over the surface at Keeneland, and Street Sense already has a couple wins at this particular meet. Justify's interesting from a pedigree standpoint because everybody wants to see a great Justify on the dirt, but Justify hasn't had a winner on the dirt yet at Keeneland in a year plus, but he had two on the turf opening weekend. And of course, you know, the big Justify overseas, City of Troy, was a turf horse for Aidan O'Brien, right? I mean, he's the star 2-3 over in Europe by Justify. So maybe Justify's going to turn out to be a little bit like American Pharoah in some respects, where the grass horses are as good or better than what they're producing on the dirt. Time will tell on that, but that's what kind of makes Keeneland fun with the pedigrees and, you know, and just so many top flight storylines to try to follow and make sense of into a gambling standpoint. The betting's been weird this meet, though, Steve. I don't know if you've noticed it either, but there have been some odd favorites, you know? I mean, I don't know if it's call money. I don't know if it's just, you know, the public jumping on things. But it's not the buyer figures. Usually, like, you see the figures and you go, okay, they're betting this horse because they have the big figure. But no, there are horses that are, like, 15 points light than others on figures, and they're getting bet to favoritism. It's, there have been, you know, and we've only run 4 days, but I got to think just off the top of my head, there've been at least a half dozen head scratchers to me where I'm like, I don't know why people are betting this way. And so it's hard to put the finger on it, but that's what you're hoping for, right? As a gambler, you're looking for mistakes in the market so you can capitalize on something that's an overlay.
Well, no doubt. A couple of quick hits in there too. You know, Justify, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the turf prowess, the Scat Daddy lineage is going to, and you know, pretty much so far, I mean, everything he's sending out is hitting. But that, you know, that's the beauty of Scat Daddy. And you know, making not just him, but, you know, and Mendelssohn and you know, the other Scat Daddy sons, Flame Away. I've got a so happens we've got a combatant yearling colt that I mean, it looks like, physically looks like any kind. So it's you know, it Scat Daddy left us too early, but luckily you've got you know, this nice array of sons that are going to carry it on. You know, speaking of pedigree, let's touch on a couple of races before I talk about the two-year-olds. There's a maiden race today, Jeremy, that we should draw attention to. You're going to have Jefferson Street is going to be the favorite off that big effort in the three-year-old debut when he ran into the Rapoli Pletcher Steamer BU. Jefferson Street for Mott and Godolphin, the Street Sense colt out of Apiary. But Rick Dutrow's got a second timer by Gormley that, is White of Barrio's little brother.
Yeah, this is a good race. I mean, right, you're talking about cage match in there. This could be a cage match in race number four today. Dutrow's horse draws the four-hole pre-scratches and Jefferson Street to the outside in the eighth post. Look, these races, like, I like the profile of the races to see. Are the public usually dialed in on this kind of race at Keeneland? Maiden special weight sprints? Yes. I mean, favorites are 15 for 28 in these for the older horses, the three and up. So favorites hit over 50% in these races. You don't look for big prices in here. You figure it's going to run close to the vest. And these two favorites in here, Jefferson Street and Cage Match, look legit off their second place finish last time for Cage Match, third place down at Gulfstream in a good race for Jefferson Street. I think those two would obviously be, you know, ruling the roost in this particular spot. I think Jefferson Street by Street Sense apt to run well here at Keeneland. Again, the Street Senses have been very effective here over the past year plus and down the line, but even just looking in the near term, the younger Street Senses are running well here at Keeneland. So I would give Jefferson Street a little bit of an edge. The outside post is probably a boost in a race like this, especially on a wet track, right? You're not going to get buried inside. You're not going to get kicked back. You'll be in the clear the whole way. So Jefferson Street probably has a better chance of winning than Cage Match today, but this is a really good older maiden special, and it should absolutely come down to those two.
Anything to impart on the two-year-olds that go in the second?
No, I mean, it's Wesley, and we'll see what he, you know, see what he has out of there after the scratches. But, you know, Image of Me by Hootenanny, and Hootenanny had two-year-old winners that he produced here in the spring last year. So he's kind of reproducing his own early brilliance at Keeneland. Of course, both those Hootenannies were trained by Wesley Ward. So is it the pedigree or is it Wesley? It's probably 90% Wesley, 10% pedigree. But I wouldn't get past the Ward in the second race there. You know, I kind of look at those races. I very rarely make a bet on the two-year-old races inter-race. I mean, I'll just be honest. I once got yelled at Remington for telling people this wasn't a good betting race and got called into the GM's office and said, don't ever say that again. But as I get a little older and bolder, you know, you got to say what's true. And so I don't think they're necessarily great betting races intra-race, but I think they're an ends to a means, you know, or means to an ends, I should say. They can get you places, right? The second race is going to start the early pick four. The second race is the second leg of the early pick five. You're going to need these races to play those wagers. And if you have an opinion in other races, just, you know, Ward wins 50% of them. So you're looking at, you know, maybe not the whole bingo free space, but you got a 50% space just, by accepting the Ward horse in there. And anytime you can use one combination in a pick four or pick five ticket and feel like you have 50% chance winning with one combination, that's actually power in your gambling. You know, I mean, that's usually you need to use several combinations to get 50% chance of winning a race. So, you know, they're effective for multi-race betting. So when I say they're not good betting races, they're not good intra-race betting races. But I think they're very effective for the pick fours, pick fives. Use them and get to the next step, and then you have more bullets to fire in your budget in those other races by not overspreading in the two-year-old race.
We'll also mention in this, I got two more two-year-old thoughts. First of all, take a close look at the four in this baby race, Baytown Amy Rose. Mm-hmm. This is game winner's first runner, and there's some buzz about Paul McEntee is generally better as a second timer than he is with his debuters. In fact, looking at 0-for-22 as a first time starter with first time starters. But keep an eye on this horse and keep an eye on Game Winner. His first runner hits the track today. It's the filly from McEntee and the Baytown team. And then final.
And I would like to say, too, Steve, just on that real quick, yeah, because, like, I've done Keeneland for a long time, so people will always try to handicap the handicapper and make assumptions about you. I never, ever, ever talk to trainers. I have no idea who the buzz is, you know? So when I'm handicapping, I'm going strictly off statistics, workout video that I can see, you know, any reports that I get, that sort of thing like that. But I'm never involved in any of the buzz when it comes to cappers and analysts around Keeneland who are tied into those scenes, and I point people to those directions because there is good information coming out of there, but I'm not definitely one who's going to be providing that.
Well, and this buzz is more Game Winner from the two-year-old sale scene.
Yeah,
and right. how his two-year-olds at OBS basically came into March mm-hmm. and now April. There's a good feel off of my trip to OBS.
I'll say this about your horse there, Baytown Amy Rose. Alvin Jimenez, the jockey, has a fantastic percentage in these two-year-old races. Now, he got a decent amount of that with Wesley Ward, but he's won a bunch of these without Wesley Ward. I think he's like 3-for-10, 3-for-11 in the two-year-old baby dashes without Wesley Ward. With Wesley Ward, he's like 7-for-10. So he has this ridiculous percentage, like 10-for-21 in the baby races. Well, he's like unbeatable when he's teamed with Ward, but he does pretty well with everybody. That means he can get a horse out of the gate and go and take that little dog leg and rides this course really well, right? It's a little bit different course going 4.5 at Keeneland than your traditional sprint race. So Alvin Jimenez does a really good job on it. Those are the kind of angles that, you know, even bolster your opinion of a horse like you're talking about, the four Baytown Amy Rose.
Well, and this should mention, scratches are up for everybody for today.
All right. Breaking news.
Yeah, there you go. And you do have, you got 7 horses came out of the 6th. And 8 horses came out of, including the MTA. This is one of the great mysteries to me. When you enter two MTOs, Dale and Kenny McPeak enter MTOs, and they both scratch. And yet, Shug is running limited liability. It stays in. Well, I don't know what you're doing off the turf, but one horse I'll point out is Uncle Jake.
Which race are we talking? 8, 6,
that,
or 8?
That 8th race. The 4. Uncle Jake has a look to me off the turf with Joel on the front end. That from Carlo Vacareza. Winner gets free arancini at Frank and Dino's.
I thought the seven Gunton Roe has a chance in here. He's a big price in the morning line. The morning line is irrelevant at this point with so many scratches, and it's a different surface and all. But I think Gunton Roe will still be a decent price because he's coming off, you know, such a bad effort. But that was in the Dust Commander. But he's got speed. Speed's going to play well in the slop, obviously, on this card. And the form is soiled by that race in the Dust Commander. So you're going to get a little bit of an overlay. The last time this horse ran so poor in January of 2023, did win the next start with a long break in between, but it's a horse who's thrown some clunkers in there on occasion and come back to run pretty well. I thought Gunton Roe was my off the turf pick in here by Gun Runner out of a First Samurai mare. So I had that one 7-13-14 off the turf. 13-14 didn't bother to show. So 7 and 8 were the two that I think I've got left in there after the scratches. In fact, now the 8's not in either. So no. I've got to reassess everything about race number 8. But I do like the 7 Gunton Roe as a shot in here probably. We'll end up being my top pick. But I'm going to adjust all my picks here over the next hour and get them into the TV department at Keeneland. So if you watch the simulcast feed, my updated picks will be after scratches. What you see each race as they appear on TV.
Well, then let me round out the visit. Jeremy Plonk with us and getting caught up on Keeneland. Second week is underway. Tomorrow, you've got the Grade 1 Maker's Mark Mile. There was somebody I thought I saw was not running.
Du jour, I believe, is what Mark
That's right.
Reported.
Du jour didn't ship, and then, of course, on Saturday, you got the Wiley. A couple of thoughts looking ahead.
Look, we're going to have a soft turf course, and I think we'll get that race in on Friday because it's a Grade 1, and I think they'll do everything in their power to run that race on the turf. So, but expect it to be under soft conditions. I always say handicap the parentheses when it's turf is soft like this. The parentheses are the foreign breeding in their name, and typically we'll see those horses have foreign racing experience as well. In the U.S., we come off the turf if it drizzles usually. These horses have no experience training over it, little experience running over it, so I give a heavy, heavy emphasis to the horses with international experience and international pedigrees to handle it. You don't need much of a boost when you're master of the seas, but I think a softer turf course will actually help his cause even more so in the Maker's Mark Mile. So I would think Master of the Seas is going to be awfully tough in there. Naval Power, obviously 7 for 8 lifetime or 6 for 7 lifetime. I mean, there'd be no shock in the other Appleby pulling this one off, but I think Master of the Seas is really good, and I think he'll come back running. We see horses first start of the year do okay in this race over the years. In fact, Breeders' Cup champions, Wise Dan did it twice, Kip DeVille did it, where they won the Breeders' Cup Mile, and then they didn't start again until the Maker's Mark Mile in the spring, and they were able to be successful. I don't think they'll beat Master of the Seas, but I think Kubrick's the interesting horse in here with that French form, ran decently on soft turf in France, and I think you're going to look at a horse who's probably going to like the conditions, a filly who's going to like the condition, or colt, I should say, who's going to like the conditions. So Kubrick for Chad Brown would be the other one in there, probably 4-5 or 4-3 in the Maker's Mile.
Have you gotten in front of the Jenny Wiley yet?
I have. This was last night, about 1 a.m., I think, is when I finished it. I have not punched anything in, so I'm going strictly off scribbles on past performances here. Let me grab this. Jenny Wiley's the 9th. We ended up in here with the 3 Elusive Princess. I'm going to take a shot with Arnaud Delacour. This is another one who's got the French form, ran well on soft turf in France, Grade 1, Group 1 runner-up on soft turf, Group 3 runner-up on soft turf, a winner on soft turf over there. I think with the conditions, second off the layoff, I like that in my form cycles, obviously, the October to March layoff, and now should be set forward. Ran right behind Fluffy Socks last time, and I think you're going to get a better price on this one than Fluffy Socks just because of the Chad factor. So I went with the Elusive Princess in a race that's really tough. Chad's got, 4 in there of the group. So give me a Elusive Princess from a good post position. Not one who's far, far back. She should be fairly into the race, you know, and this race typically is won by horses near the front. The Jenny Wiley, you know, you do not want to be too far off the pace in this race. So the last 5 winners have been within a length after the opening half. And, it's just a race where horses have had a lot of success controlling it on the front end.
Well, Jeremy Blanc, everybody, controls Keeneland on the front end. And talk about your Derby preparations and you and Siegel and everything else you're working on over the next 3+ weeks.
Oh, just Siegel and I do podcasts. You can follow those on the Horse Player Now YouTube page and through the Twitter at Horse Player Now. We do a First Call podcast, and we also do one on a Friday, a First Call podcast, where we do handicapping. Then we do one called It's Official on Tuesdays, where it's kind of a recap of the weekend's big events and topics in horse racing. So those two podcasts each week. Have a lot of fun working with Jeff. We probably talk 20 minutes before we start rolling. Then we record for about 40 minutes, and then we talk sports for about an hour after we do every show. We just have a really great rapport. He's become a great friend over the last several years, and I love his opinion on sports and horses, and we have a lot of fun. We get on each other a little bit throughout the podcast, and I think it's a good it's a good chance to talk horses and talk handicapping. So I enjoy doing those with Jeff every week. Countdown to the Crowns in its 19th season. You can check out my weekly scouting report, countdowntothecrown.com, or go to horseplayernow.com and click on the countdown link there. I've got handicapping for the Lexington this coming weekend. And of course, over the next few weeks, we're going to have a couple Preakness type preps. You know, you got one at Oaklawn, you got the Tessio coming up at Laurel. We've got the new Hawthorne race, the resurrected Illinois Derby, if you will, towards the Preakness. So that's coming up. So we'll preview all those races because we counted all the way down through the Belmont Stakes. So we're looking for horses for the Preakness and Belmont as well, even if they're not Derby horses after this particular week. And of course, our Derby, that comes out every Friday, but Derby week we'll release on Thursday because early wagering starts on Friday, obviously, for the Kentucky Derby. So we'll release that Thursday of Derby week with all of the information on all the major contenders for the Kentucky Derby. That's the favorite project I've ever done. I've been doing this since 1993 was the first paycheck I drew in the horse racing industry, and I've been doing it for 31 years now. And my favorite thing I do is write Countdown to the Crown every week. It takes so freaking long. It's a lot of work, but I can't put it down. I wanted to quit it about 10 years ago because I was too busy with other jobs, and I can't put it down. It's the one thing that I love doing. So hopefully people appreciate that about it when they read it each week. So I look forward to putting it out. I've got about 12 hours to get it finished tonight for tomorrow. So, but we're pretty good there. This week we're going to review the three big races from last weekend. I've got those reviews put aside. The Lexington handicapping analysis is the last touches to put on it for this week, and we'll write that tonight.
Jeremy, always great, and we'll certainly connect for Derby thoughts in a few weeks.
Take care, Steve. It's good to be with you, and good luck to all the listeners out there at Keeneland today.
Jeremy Blanc giving you the Keeneland insights, and as you mentioned, his Countdown to the Crown. He's done a great job on that for years, and we finished up there with the Jenny Wiley, so what a perfect segue to Crafty. Let's get Jeff Franklin in here. Some win using Thoroughgraph discussion, and we got to meet Jeff in person for the first time, which was very good. After talking to him for years, actually, for many years, but then came out to Clocker's Corner last week, or 2 weeks ago. That's how long I was in California. And he joins us now. I never saw you on Saturday.
Oh, long story, Steve.
Oh, all right.
You know, it was amateur hour around my household. I had all these out of towners, and it's the longest story. So I won't bore you.
No problem.
Sorry. I hope you did well.
Yeah, did okay. A couple of moments. Of celebration, but it was a fabulous day. I mean, to have the Dottori situation, that sort of carried the first half of the card, and then then the serious stakes began, and they took care of everything else.
Yeah, well, the Dottori thing just that was freaky. That was so much fun, and. You know, it's not like Frankie has a little bit of a personality problem to milk it, right?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
No, it was a great day. Wonderful.
Well, let's also take the opportunity to recap from last week.
Okay, well, obviously, the Madison you know, Alva does what Alva does. I mean, no surprises there.
That was fabulous.
Right. I mean, just, boy, what a mare. The turf race, Arzak performed as we thought he would. I tried to connect him with Arshad, who ran fourth. And anyway, from a thoroughbred perspective, everything ran pretty predictably. That, you know, at least I made a little bit of money on Arzak and some horizontals. So that was nice.
Yeah, I had that exacta with Arzak. They were the obvious to me. They were the two players.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's tough on a day when you're live on any big day, and it's fine when it's the sole focus. Like let's say Derby Day or Travers Day. It's hard to try to keep track elsewhere. On a big day, it was hard to watch, you know, keep an eye on what was happening at Aqueduct and what was happening at Keeneland. The middle portion, actually, Hammer and I were kind of hung in his office and we were watching, you know, the two other venues, you know, during the early portion of Santa Anita. But then, you know, once we hit, I guess we went out, let's see, we must have gone out for the fourth at Santa Anita, because we saw, because I presented in the Oaks was the sixth. Yeah, we were out for the Evening Jewel, which was 4:30 Eastern time. So, you know, at that point, you pull up your phone and you get a peek at what's happening at Keeneland, and then you watch a replay that you missed the live race at Aqueduct. It's a little tough to, you know, throw in some multi-race bets and, you know, bet that big three, pick three. And, that seemed to work, right? It paid, $221, I think. Something like that. Let me go back to that from Saturday. That was, I actually hit that on a backup ticket. Was clever enough to do a backup with resilience. That where is it? $226.50.
Take that.
Yeah, that made it worth playing actually. And it's not like, you know, I mean, what? Sierra Leone and Stronghold. You had a mild surprise, like what? The third, fourth choice in the Wood, the obvious favorite in the Bluegrass, and then, you know, one of three horses that could win the Santa Anita Derby. That was a very, for $3, that was a very approachable ticket for people to play.
Right.
I hope people tried it for the higher denomination. And that's why this paid okay, because of the higher denomination.
So I fortunately, I was a little busy earlier on today. I didn't get a chance to listen and hear if there was any Sierra Leone chatter, but I was curious what the general consensus was of, you know, just what everybody thought of as Bluegrass. I think I talked a couple times on the air. I have a decent bet on him in the futures, 18-1, and I'm just curious, you know, what everybody thought.
You and Rich Eng. Rich Eng cashed.
Well,
he got UConn at 18-1.
Oof. Oh gosh!
How about that? Yeah.
Okay.
He's done this. He's done it 2 years in a row, because last year he got on board UConn when they were on that weird three game losing streak, and he jumped all over him. I think he last year. We'll talk to him next, but I think he got like 20. I want to say he got like 22, 23-1 last year when UConn fishtailed for like a week, and he jumped on him.
Wow.
Yeah. The future bets are 18-1. You got that group of guys. You got those 10 guys. We talked. To Howard and his group. The 10 guys each put up $100, and so they each stand to cash Sierra Leone. If he can win Derby, they each would get $15,000. Pretty cool. They got him at 150-1 early on last year. So there's, yeah, there's this is what we need. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, shall we dive into the apple blossom?
Yeah. Yes.
Or did you want to start with the, oh, you wanted to go with the Jenny because we were just talking about that. Okay. We can go with the Jenny if that's what you prefer.
Yeah. Let's do the Jenny Wiley for, and to answer your question, the, after going in a completely different direction, the consensus is strong. I mean, he's obviously, you know, he obviously is going to need pace to run at, but it's the Derby, and you would think there will be pace to run at. And what's not to like? He grinds out and comes with, you know, with a focus and a powerful finish. I mean, it's hard not to be impressed, and you know, I think it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, a fierceness after fierceness, he's the obvious choice.
Yeah, and I know fierceness number is about four lengths faster. His Florida Derby win, I think it was about four lengths faster than Sierra Leone ran in the Bluegrass. The thing I'm in love with Sierra Leone is I think he's a big goofball, doesn't have it figured out yet. And this, to me, he can run a mile a quarter like tomorrow. And so, anyway, we'll see. I was just curious if there are people smarter than I that have a comment or two.
First, they would have to prove that they're smarter. That's number one.
Thanks, Steve. So, I'm afraid that in the Jenny Wiley, I can't deviate too far from what Jeremy just said. The two horses that I had looked at, and again, from a thoroughbred perspective, shameless self-promotion here. I wish everybody who hasn't done so would go to thoroughbred.com. You'll see a green box there. Put in your email. There's no salesmanship, no schmaltz here. We'll send you every week the two races or three races that Steve and I go over. And it's a great way to get indoctrinated into the sheets and follow these conversations. So if you haven't done it, please do so now. But from a sheets perspective, thoroughbred perspective, it's a fascinating race to me because I'm reckoning it will take about three to win the race. And two of the Chads, Fluffy Sox and Gina Romantica, run right about that. So they're kind of obvious choices to hit the board, etc. But I think Elusive Princess, and I thank my good friend Joe McKay, who had sent me the replays earlier on of the Hillsborough. And she had one of those trips that it doesn't really show up in the trip notes as something that stands out with exclamation marks. But when you watch the race, you figure, and she, you know, she should have probably been a couple lengths closer and still ran a four, which puts her right in the picture. And she's a four-year-old in a developing pattern. I just love that. So she would be a horse at 8-1 that I think is just a really solid play. And the huge question mark to me is Cherie DeVoe's horse, Star Fortress,
yeah,
who ran, you know, right? And I don't know what to make of her because off the first race she ran in this country, she ran a zero. And so in theory, equal trip, she's supposed to beat the other mares by 2 to 3 lengths. Then she regresses for two starts in races that were kind of difficult to entirely throw out. So I'm not going to give up on her yet at 15-1, but I think between Elusive Princess, Star Fortress, and the two Chads, that's to me what the race pretty much comes down to. And of course, the X Factor, Charlie Appleby. You know, English Rose, what are we going to do with her? He's so effective bringing these mares over. So those are the five that I looked at. How about you?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add. Certainly, I was intrigued that Jeremy found Elusive Princess so readily. But, you know, beyond that, I mean, Gina Romantica, she comes back as a five-year-old in this spot, and no reason to think that, you know, she doesn't, you know, fire at first asking. You ask the key question about you know, how many chances we give Star Fortress after that. I mean, just stunning effort.
Stunning. Yep.
Now the one thing you might fold into her. You got these sand-based courses in Kentucky at Churchill and at Keeneland, and they are different than what she encountered certainly at Gulfstream, and Gulfstream was kind of a, you know, was kind of a messy that filly and mare Pegasus thing, you know, went sideways. I'll be very curious to see, especially with the give in the ground that you can anticipate on Saturday, given how much rain they've gotten in Kentucky. So, yeah, I think you've got, you know, you got the obvious players. You know, Didia, we got to at least mention Didia off that Pegasus filly and mare win for Nacho Correas, and you know he picks spots judiciously with her. So, you know, she won and turned to this spot.
One other thing that I'd like to point out is that for a Thoroughgraph player, when I see surge capacity is 5-2 on the morning line, she's slow. Don't get me wrong. I expect her to run a new top, but she's 2-3 lengths slower than a handful of mares in this race. And she's going to have to do something she's never done before to win. She's 5-2. So she doesn't get a weight advantage, you know, okay. So she's a four-year-old, and four-year-olds often turn a corner. In fact, we'll talk about that in the Apple Blossom in a moment. But this is a great betting race to me for that purpose.
Well, the problem with pattern, you know, with this kind of a horse, with Chad Brown, is that invariably when you make that determination, they still fire.
What can I tell you?
They still fire. And you know, I know some people think that, you know, sheet methodology is not as effective on turf as it is on dirt. I disagree. I do very well. That I do best with New York breds long on the turf. Off of Thoroughgraph patterns, but Chad does have a tendency. I mean, when you look at a horse like this, and you say, "Well, this horse has got to improve," invariably they do improve. And it's funny that this one, Nick Tamaro, obviously is kind of, you know, trying to peek around the corner at the betting a little bit. With you know, to have her 5-1, he's sort of, I think, you know, straddling the center line. You know, that she could come a little lower, she could maybe float a little higher. But I
she also, I mean, she is 4-5,
yeah,
and probably is one of those mares who runs just hard enough to win. So can she throw three more lengths down at him and get up in the final yards? I mean, it wouldn't shock me, but it is, from a value perspective, it's a race I'm compelled to bet and not use her on top.
Now that's fine, but I would be
beware, right?
Yeah,
beware,
be plenty aware. let's go to Oaklawn and a really fun addition. You know, the Apple Blossom is. Yeah, obviously they've changed what was the Racing Festival of the South that had a great run with a kind of a 3-day weekend. So they each now have standalone weekend as a centerpiece. This is a really interesting group of horses, and you know, one thing I did not mention for those of you that heard Julie Davies earlier on the show and Tammy Bobo talking about their Derby starter Catalytic. Julie Davies is the trainer who started Adair Manor. That's a product of her program.
Interesting.
Yeah. So here she shows up at Oaklawn.
Well, and yeah, and all the Derry Manor does is win races for a living. She's what an impressive racehorse, and obviously Bob is Bob. He can get the money as well as anybody. So we're looking at a formidable favorite. Still, there's another horse in the race too that is, you know, a headliner, and that's Wet Paint, who from a thoroughgraph perspective also is going to have to do something she hasn't done before. I expect her to run a new top, but she's been a little slower than advertised from a strictly thoroughgraph perspective. And thus, second time in this conversation, you know, kind of vulnerable. She loves Oaklawn. Okay, she's 3-for-3 in Oaklawn. She's had a bit of a layoff, and this is typically when, you know, four-year-olds will grow up and maybe she'll run 2-3 lengths faster than she's done before. But she's sure, to me, not a compelling bet, particularly with the Derry Manor and a couple of the others that that I think could move forward. And the two in particular are Shotgun Annie and Honor DeLady. Shotgun Annie is also getting 6 pounds from a Derry Manor. And that's a critical weight concession for a horse that's, I mean, in theory, she's just about as fast as a Derry Manor. Well, 6 pounds from thoroughgraph at this distance is approaching 1.5 to 2 points. And okay, she's drawn outside. She might lose ground, but she's in good pattern. She wins races. So to me, she'll be really tough. I wish I had a morning line on her. I checked a while ago and I didn't see it. And Honor DeLady for Safi Joseph already turned the corner. And as an emerging four-year-old, she's developing. A lot of people would look at that pattern and say, oh, she's going to bounce. I'm saying no. No, I think she's going to move forward. I think she's figured it all out. So those are really the four I focused on. And I'd be remiss if I didn't throw in Bella Moore, who Steve's had her for 2 races now. And she ran a spectacular number 2 starts ago. You know, couldn't be entirely surprised if she didn't jump up and run a good one, although she's a 6-year-old. So that's how I see the race. How about you?
Well, I'll start with, since you brought up Bella Moore coming out of the Houston Ladies Classic, and there is a Houston Ladies Classic Exeter I want to touch on. But if we're talking pattern, for those of you that are looking at Bella Moore, notice that off the layoff from July, and Simon Callahan had her, when she went to Carlos Santa Maria, and she ran a very good race in the Spinster, when she was second, but then she reacted. So first off, the layoff is the time it appears to get Bella Moore, and she did the same thing for Steve, you know, off of only a 30-day layoff, which, you know, is really not too pronounced, to be honest. 65 days, I should say. And she ran that 1.5, and then she reacted promptly. So you do kind of wonder. I mean, that's something we talk about with sprinters, with pattern recognition. You know, the time to get sprinters is off a layoff. They run well. This is a horse that looks like needs time to recover from layoff efforts. So just a cautionary on that front.
And to underscore your point. Even as a 4-year-old, her last race in November, she ran a 2, and then she required about 3 months to get back on the train from that. Then she came back at Keeneland. It took her about 3 months to recover. You wouldn't be a fool if you said, wow, I love the race in Houston, but, I'm going to watch this one and hope that she'll run an improving pattern and I'll better next time. So,
well,
it's a good point, Steve.
You know, and there's a horse here that ran against her in the Houston Ladies Classic, which was January 27th, and that horse has run 3 times since. It's Casey Pommier's Free Like a Girl, and this is Carl DeVille's daughter, and she does a great job, and she has done an unbelievable job with this mare. I was on hand for closing day at Fairgrounds when they won the Chantal Lannery. This is a filly that is going to, whatever the morning line is, she's going to be underappreciated, you know, because of her company lines. But she is very, very eligible in here. And all she has to do is run any of the twos that she has run, and she's competitive with the best in the field.
Yeah, and further, she's got a ground-saving post position, obviously, if it works out for her that way. The one negative I would see, just to ride the coattails of the point we just made, is in the last 2 years, every time she's run a two, she's reacted severely. And she ran a two in her last start on tight spacing. It's going to be tough for me to see her not reacting here. But she does also get the 6 pounds from the high weights. So be curious to see what her line is. Still, I would prefer to see Shotgun Annie and Honor DeLady as the two, you know, value plays in the race.
Fair enough. Taxed has got to be discussed as well. And mm-hmm. She's stretching back out. For those of you that were watching on that card when she returned March 16th, the assumption was, and the discussion was, that she, you know, probably is just out there for fitness, and then she promptly was spectacular. I mean, it just looked terrific. Randy Morse, you know, this is his prize filly, and of course we all went to town with her in the Black Eyed Susan. So here she is trying to win a grade one. This was a brilliant claim going back to November of her 2-year-old year. Taxed, you know, is going to come in here needing to improve probably 2 points plus, but I would not put it past her. The problem is I doubt she's going to be much of a value.
Right.
That's the only, you know. That's
I agree
the
with everything you just said. She's it wouldn't surprise you if she moved forward. Little tight spacing off the sprint. You know, you like to see the fillies maybe get, you know, 7-8 weeks. Okay, but that's nitpicking. She's a contender.
Well, and I'll make the point. There's a fascinating, shocking actually tidbit in here. If you go back, and I've got, I don't know if I see, I use the thorough. Quick as opposed to the full sheet.
Full sheet.
But I think it is on here. It is. How about her running on New Year's Eve in 22 in the year's end stake with Lasix? Mm-hmm. This was off the claim. Then she comes off Lasix for the Martha Washington and runs a big career new top. On the buyer scale, she went 65.79, and on Thoroughgraph, she went from a 13 to a 7, which basically established, you know, kind of a new plateau for her that she has been working off since. So here she is doing a similar, just unusual to see a horse that already has shown the ability to, you know, run well coming off Lasix. So I just, that caught my eye. I thought that was odd.
Yeah, that's significant. And something we didn't mention is that her thorough pattern has a 42% prediction for a new top. That's extraordinarily high. I've learned the computer's a lot smarter than me at times.
So. Well, there's something, you know, for those, again, if you're looking at the sheet and you can see that she left the end of her 3-year-old season was that 5.25. She, you know, was off a little under 6 months, came back and ran a slight new top, which often augurs for more improvement. So there you go.
There you go.
This is why we have these discussions. It's when using Thoroughgraph with the crafty one. Somebody should name a horse. There was the very one, and there should be the crafty one.
Well, Jay Bly actually did name a horse after me called Jerry Fanning trained called Crafty. And he became a sire. He won a couple stakes.
Look at that.
Jay and I played golf in the day. And oh my gosh, that was 25 years ago, 30 years ago. Anyway.
Well, it was it was fabulous to spend time with you live and in person. I'm so glad you came out two Thursdays ago. And we are working our way toward Louisville. And I'll talk next week. But when using Thoroughgraph, thoroughgraph.com. upper right-hand corner. If you aren't getting the free sheets, why not? Why would you say no? I mean, Jerry Brown is giving you free sheets, and you're not subscribed? Believe me, there's a lot of people who would like something from Jerry, and you can have it.
That's true.
Yeah. Right?
Yep, no, it's true. So every now and again, Jerry has a kind spot in his heart. You know, it's rare, but there it is. So take advantage of it. And so, Steve, until next week, good luck to everybody. And as usual, I welcome any questions on anything. Jeff at Thoroughgraph.com. Please feel free, as you guys have done so many times over these last months. Let me know what your thoughts are.
Crafty JF. Jeff Franklin, everybody. Jeff, thank you. We will swing over to Rich Eng and Chloe. We got 10 minutes. Perfect. All right. Not perfect, but it'll have to do. So we can, at the very least, we can congratulate Rich on cashing that ticket. I tell you, he is clever. He seized on, you know, the minute there was an opening, when he saw a price that made sense. He did it last year. He did it last year with the Huskies, and now he's done it again. Rich Eng, congratulations.
Hey, good morning, Steve, and happy to talk to you on the eve of the Masters. I got a couple of golfers in my pocket if people are interested, and I think they can still get down even though the tournament has started.
Well, yeah, I guess the depends on does it depend on if your threesome has gone off or what?
You know what? That's a great question. I don't know exactly the rules, but I'll tell the two golfers I have in my pocket, and if people have a chance to get down, they can ride along with me, if the case may be. But I picked two former champions, Masters champions. And a part of the reason is a horse racing angle, Steve. You know how horses for courses,
yeah.
If a horse seems to like a course, whether it's a main track or a turf course, they tend to run over it pretty well again when they go back to it. And the two golfers I have are Hideki Matsuyama, 21-1, and Jordan Spieth, 25-1, and they're both former champions. So knock on wood, hopefully one of them can repeat.
Very good. All right. That I was gonna. The minute you said Masters morning, I figured that you had some action. You had to feel great. Once UConn got past Alabama, there were a couple of anxious moments, but you had that ticket, Rich. And what did you get last year? I when they went on that little tailspin, you jumped on them in what, December of last year, UConn, and you cashed that for how much?
Well, I think they were right around 16-1, something like that, when I had them last year. And, yeah, because I had bought them after they went on like a three-game losing streak, and all of a sudden people were jumping off the bandwagon. And, you know, it's a good time to get on. If you believe in a team, there are ups and downs in the course of a season. And this year I started betting them at 18-1 in November. And then, believe it or not, Steve, I actually found a sports book in town where you could actually bet parlays using a future book bet, future book team. So in late November, in December, January, I would be making like NFL football parlays and college football parlays, and I would throw in just a little sprinkle of a team with UConn or two teams with UConn. And, you know, admittedly, they were small sprinkles, but, you know, I had literally dozens of parlay tickets going into UConn at descending odds. It's, you know, like 12-1, 10-1, 8-1. I finally stopped at 5-1 because I thought that was just borderline value. But it was a good result. You know, the last time I was on, Steve, I had mentioned that I had five teams to start the tournament.
Right.
Four of them went by the wayside. I think Marquette was the one that actually went the furthest other than UConn. But, yeah, I had one team out of the final four. But just the way they played, I mean, obviously you watch the games and your listeners watch the games. They were just so dominant. And they play a style of ball that is just actually beautiful to watch. Constant motion, great defense, help defense, and extremely unselfish. It's great to see kids willing to pass the basketball and not care who scores. And they played great defense. So wonderful win by UConn Huskies and Danny Hurley.
Well, brilliant job, Rich. I mean, how and the parlay tickets are crazy. That's an aspect you hadn't mentioned. Very clever. That is another dimension, actually. So
yeah, if folks get to the Vegas and you know want to try that type of parlay bet with their future books, say if somebody comes in the next couple of weeks and wants to bet a Major League Baseball team to win the World Series, I would suggest a little sprinkling in some of the parlays, because for example, if I had a $10 three-team parlay, say I had the San Francisco 49ers, the Baltimore Ravens to UConn, a $10 ticket could be worth as much as $200 or $300, excuse me, depending on the odds. When you got UConn, it's almost ridiculous how it explodes because of the future book angle of it. So I would suggest that people are coming out here and they're going to do a future book, say on World Series or some other sport, that they sprinkle a little bit of that in. You could turn $5, $10, $15, $20 into quite a handful if they cash, because future book bets are extremely hard to catch.
How about that? Well done, Rich. We've said for years, Rich's sports opinions. That's why we ask him, and we would fold it into his horse talk. Rich, I wasn't gonna let the day and the week slip away without getting in a congratulations and a well done.
I really appreciate that, Steve. And my only further dream would have been if UConn had played Colgate for the championship. Well, that would have been fun.
We I don't know. Suddenly we're I don't know. We last couple after a good run where we were really giving those teams, the big teams in the first round, we were giving them games. I mean, they ran into. I mean, the way Baylor that was actually shocking. The way Baylor played us, where they hit every shot they put up, and mm-hmm. and then promptly just turned into jello. It was very strange because they I don't know if it was a confidence issue or what. I will tell you this. I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday on my flight home, and I'm not going to rub it in on Purdue. Everybody knows I'm just not a fan. I got to Midway on Tuesday, and I had to go from finger B to finger A, and a plane had obviously come in from Phoenix. And here's all these Chicagoland Purdue fans getting off the plane, and boy, oh boy. They all, every one of them looked like Gene Cady to me. It was.
I'm sorry to hear that.
they all had the puss on. It was. I've made those trips myself, so I'm the first to admit. I know what it feels like, to schlep home after a loss. I'm sorry. I can't help myself.
That's funny.
In fact, Chuck and I were. We made our master list of, in the wake of this Calipari stuff, we made the master list of coaches that we've historically have rooted against. Gene Cady was the top of mine, and along with Billy Tubbs. There's another guy. There's an underrated guy to root against, Billy Tubbs.
Yeah, Billy Tubbs with Oklahoma. He was a great guy to root against.
Right?
And in this marketplace, a lot of people hated Jerry Tarkanian when he coached the Running Rebels.
Oh, I would disagree. I loved the Shark.
I loved him too. But there was a lot of sentiment against him for some reason.
Crazy. Anti-Armenian or what? I don't know what that is. But Billy Tubbs, Joe B. Hall, Gene Cady, Jim Boeheim.
How about John Thompson? A lot of people didn't like John Thompson.
How could you not? How could people not like John Thompson? Unbelievable. John Thompson was, and this, I had the benefit of covering Syracuse, actually the first year of the Big East. So I got to meet all those coaches, John Calhoun and Rolly Massimino and Luke Carnesecca. And every one of them was wonderful, except for Jim Boeheim.
You know, I'm glad you met Lou. You mentioned Louis Carnesecca because you know, I'm a St. John's grad, and
that's right.
I had season tickets right behind the St. John's bench at Alumni Hall, and you could hear Louis because I was that close, and it's hilarious, just hilarious. You know, talking to the refs and stuff like that. he was a character.
Yeah, he was a tremendous, tremendous character. That was one of the of my sports writing career, which you know, but it had little flashes here and there. But that was a special. You know, they ended up going to the NIT championship against Michigan, and it was some fun team to cover, except when you had to talk to Boeheim, who just was nasty, miserable, snarling for no good reason. I mean, just even when they would win, he would be miserable. He's just an awful person, just awful.
You know, they should have nicknamed Jim Boeheim the hostess coach because he always scheduled cupcakes at the beginning.
Hey now, I love it. Good job, Rich. Well done. I'll talk next week.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Good luck, everybody.
Rich Yang, everybody. And, of course, Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, the second edition. And, boy, what a morning this was. Thanks to Rich and to Jeff Franklin, of course, Jeremy Plonk, David Aragona, Tammy Bobo, and Julie Davies. If you missed that, you'll enjoy the replay. And Gary Falter. We brought everybody up to speed on ownerview.com. Replay 6 to 9 here on the network tomorrow, weekend preview with a couple of interesting visits, including Roger Satina tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsemen, nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season. The $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 15th.
We're racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Scholarships are available. Visit rtip.arizona.edu.